blew me off for a bottle of tequila. Tequila's no good for you. Doesn't call, doesn't write. It's not nearly as much fun to wake up to.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Scalpels and Tequila, a Grey's Anatomy recap podcast. I'm Ayla.
And I'm Tamsin, and today we are doing Season 3, Episode 14, Walk on Water.
Well, actually, Episode 16, Drowning on Dry Land. Oh. It wasn't me.
What's wrong with me? I just had the wrong notes open. I'm sorry. Ignore everything I just said. Season 3, Episode 16, Drowning on Dry Land. But even the number was wrong.
Yeah, but it's also we're coming off a 38-degree day yesterday and both of us have got a little smidge of the heat stroke. So
I actually think my brain melted. Like Tom was just kind of walking in circles. I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I don't know.
Mine genuinely did. By the end of the day, I think I'd gotten sunburn on my eyes. And if anyone's ever had that before, it sucks. But it quickly turned into a migraine. And, my brain was collapsing down the back of my skull and falling into my neck, I'm pretty sure. It was awful.
So it was so brutal yesterday.
But I will say one really positive thing that happened yesterday is that we got a message from a listener who gave us some info about the timeline.
Which is what we all need.
The amount of messages that come at us also being so confused about the heck is going on and how long all of this is taking. I hope you are sitting down. I hope you are at a traffic light if you are listening to this in your car. Like, gird your loins.
I was not prepared.
And it still doesn't make that much sense. This was sent in by a lovely listener. Their name is RB Stan Sanark, if I'm saying that. We are so bad with people's usernames. My gosh.
I think it's Sansa Stark. It's like a reference to Game of Thrones.
Oh, Stanza Snark. Oh, they're snarky. Mm-hmm. I love that for them. They love cats and going for walks with their cats, and this is great. But they sent us through a link with information about the timeline and gave us this recap. It's generally accepted that seasons 1 to 3 take place over 12 months as its internship is only a year. All of this has happened in less than a year.
This is mind-blowing to me, but also it's like, oh, why didn't we think of that? Because, yeah.
I always just assumed it was a 3-year internship.
Well, same.
Anywho, they go on to say there's some discrepancies. There's a few dates we see on screen, sometimes along with the year the episode was aired, but this is considered an error. For example, remember when Bailey's son is rushed into hospital mid-season 4? He's barely a year old, but he was born in the middle of season 2. A little bit of a spoiler there, but you get what we're getting at.
But that's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so.
Yeah.
So basically this means everything we have rewatched this far is on a really short timeline. Addison's arrival was 3 months in. She and Derek tried to make things work for 6 to 7 months. Burke asked Christina to move in only a month after her surgery. Like, come on.
Yep.
We thought that was rushed. Izzy knew Denny for 4 months total. The train crash, the bomb, Denny, Mr. O'Malley's death, and the ferry crash are supposedly all in the same 9 months or so. So Addison's abortion was before she arrived on the show, not from the tiny towel sex.
Yeah, yeah. It actually makes sense.
Yeah, but how the fuck are these guys still working at this hospital?
Well, yeah,
they've gone through a bomb.
It's been a brutal, brutal year.
Yeah.
But it actually
where
makes
is
sense.
The mandatory counseling? That's wild.
In the link, in the timeline link, it does say that A Hard Day's Night, which is the pilot episode, takes place on July 1st to July 3rd. So it spans that 48-hour window. And new interns, apparently, it's just always start on that date in real life. So it makes sense in that as well. And it says Derek moved to Seattle 6 weeks before we meet him. So he's new, but he's been there like 6 weeks.
Long enough that everyone knows his name and he knows his way around.
Exactly.
Just absolutely not.
It helps clear a lot up, and I think we'll be able to go through the timeline a little bit easier now.
Yeah. Like, we still have questions about Meredith's past and sort of where she grew up in relation to the hospital and that kind of thing, but at least we've solved the dilemma of these guys fall hard and fast. That's all I'm going to say. That means that Burke has swindled Christina into marriage in 9 months.
Well, and Callie and George have gotten married a lot quicker.
Yeah, like 3 months.
Not even. I don't even think it's that.
I still don't.
It's weeks. If this is only a year.
No. No. I still think Izzy's comments at the end of this episode are unwarranted, poorly timed, and...
Well, yes, of course they are. But it's just, it's a lot shorter that they've even really known each other.
Yeah, like if someone in my just headband. Said to George, you guys have only been sort of dating for 3 months.
Yeah.
With the gap of his father's death in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh. But I suppose on to the episode.
Yeah. I mean, it's the second part of last week's episode, and we've had two double-part episodes in a very short amount of time. But anyway, here we go. It does open with a bit of a monologue, just a tiny, tiny one. Like I said, disappearances happen. Pains go phantom. Blood stops running and people fade away. There's more I have to say, so much more, but I've disappeared. And that is happening as Meredith is falling into the water. Well, she's already in the water, sorry. She's going under the water.
So I feel like
there's a lot of really beautiful shots in this episode. Like a lot of really beautiful water shots. Excellent. It feels like a movie. Yeah, it's got a really different vibe to our normal episodes, which it would, because they're shooting on this huge, big outdoor location.
So there's sort of a few main parts to this episode. We've got Meredith, which only sort of comes in at the end. Christine is still at the hospital. George is still frantically looking for this lost little 7-year-old boy. We don't get a lot from our Jane Doe. I've called her Mushface in my notes. I know it's terribly insensitive. The clinic is still full of people desperately searching for their families. Izzy is still battling for the man under the car. And Derek...
You can't call her Mushface.
Jane Doe.
This is not what we're about here.
And then we see the x-ray. We just get a glimpse of the x-ray in her OR and see the fact that her entire skull around her right eye is completely shattered.
Mm. This is Alex's, one of Alex's main storylines today, because he's pulled her out of the water and he is just really, really wants to follow this case through the end, wants to make sure that she's found, her family finds her, and she's claimed. He's working alongside Addison today because this Jane Doe patient has gone to Addison because she's pregnant. And Addison's not in a good way. Addison's lonely. Addison's so sad, and it's heartbreaking.
She has a lot of these little lines dropped in there that are just huge red flags and warning signals that her mental health is seriously depreciating.
Yeah. She says to Alex, like, if I disappeared, no one would notice.
Be looking for me.
And that's the main theme of this episode as well, is this, it's such a carry-on from last week. This disappeared, something's missing, going lost, and having that be not just a physical thing, but it's like a mental state of mind.
Helplessness.
Totally. And I think it is because all these characters feel so disconnected from each other. no one's really communicating. Everyone's wrapped up in their own thoughts and in their own little worlds that they do feel really disconnected. And it's that disconnection that's creating a whole lot of loneliness and creating a whole lot of feelings of like, no one would know I was here. Because even though Addison is the one that says it, Meredith's feeling it too. I think Alex is dealing with so much death and so much lost people this episode that he is pushing all of his feelings of loneliness down. We have to remember that Alex, as much as he has confidence and, you know, he has bravado, he doesn't really have any friends here either.
He's definitely one of them, but he doesn't have a person.
Yeah.
Everyone else is kind of paired off. His person at the moment, the closest thing to it is probably Addison.
Exactly.
And it really felt like Sydney was trying to, like, make herself known in this episode by Alex.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not in, like, a flirty way or anything, but she's running the ER, I guess. She's down there trying to – oh, yeah, it's happening in the clinic. Mm. She's down in the clinic today, so she's kind of just around a lot. And, you know, Sydney's a helpful person. She wants to help all these people that are piling up in the clinic. She's just there to help.
Sydney really feels like the only character who is able to see outside themselves. You know, she very much sees when our characters are struggling and is invested in the mental and physical health of the interns, where all of our other attendings aren't. Alex is spending the day running around trying to figure out how to get the family members that are in the clinic the information they need to be able to identify the people that they're looking for.
Totally, and he's doing this, A, because he every time he walks near that group of people, they just absolutely hound him, mm-hmm. like paparazzi on, like, the Beatles.
Correct.
But also he's personally invested to this Jane Doe, and a part of him is just so hoping that her people are out there, are one of them. So he wants to figure this out, not just for everybody because he's a decent human, but for his Jane Doe as well.
Mm-hmm. But Webber puts a responsibility on him. Alex asks him, what do we do about this? How do we sort this out? And Webber's just like, you're the system, figure it out yourself. And I don't know if you all remember last episode, but George snapping a weird Polaroid of Callie. Light bulb goes off.
Yeah, that was such, like, foreshadowing,
mm-hmm.
really clunkily. Like, there's no medical reason that was explained to us why there's, like, a Polaroid there today, why George had it, why he was taking photos of Callie. Like, if it was explained, like, oh, this is still in my bag, it's from Vegas, we were using it to take photos of our wedding. Like, if there was any explanation to it whatsoever, it would have made more sense. But it really annoys me because mm-hmm. it just sticks out. It's like, you have this, but, like, why is that there? Clearly, it's got to be used in the storyline. I think they mentioned that it was
for medical documenting. But the fact of the matter is, we've never seen anyone use it before today.
That's so vague.
Yeah.
No.
But Alex thinks outside the box and does a big old smart and goes around photographing all of the patients who've been brought in to put up on the bulletin board. And it works.
Yeah, it's so clever. Everyone does something really, really heroic today. And this is Alex's big move, and he's able to save so many people's heartache and questions and panic and worry purely by, he did it. Like, he came up with a system. I actually think Webber saying, like, you're the system, figure it out, and Alex snapping and being like, if you give me a minute, like, I'll come up with a system. I think some people need to be pushed like that to come up with stuff, because if there was already a system or whatever, or he wasn't told he had to just figure it out himself, like, he might have just not done it. it's like at work when you're just like thrown a task and it feels really hard or scary, but it's also someone believing in you at the same time. Like, I don't think Weber was doing it maliciously. I do think he thinks Alex was going to figure something out, but Alex didn't believe in himself at that moment. And then he did, and he gets to be the hero, and he gets to feel nice.
With the amount of these similar style situations we've seen so far, I'm very surprised something like this wasn't put in place. And I really do hope that this becomes something that sticks around, because it's ingenious. Because I can't just have random citizens meandering around the hospital.
Totally. We do see this come back. Alex has implemented like a really important tool.
And I think one of the most important things that he does is actually goes to the morgue and photographs all the people there, because yes, it's a horrible thing to find out that someone that you care about has passed away, but the not knowing would be so much worse.
Yeah. Yeah. You can move on once you know, whereas you can't move on when you have that piece
of hope. The main reason that he goes to the morgue in the first place is because when he's put up the initial photos, there's a man in the group of family members who says, "I'm looking for a pregnant woman." And he just immediately goes to the Jane Doe and he runs into Addison and says,
"Yeah,
I found her. This is her name. Her husband's out there." And Addison brings out the brutal truth of, do not give them hope unless you have checked every pregnant person in the morgue. Devastating.
Devastating. And Alex wants this so much. He wants to find this woman's family so much.
I think he's just fully aware of how much support she's going to need over her recovery.
Yeah, totally. He also feels a bit of responsibility because he found her. Without him, she wouldn't be there. So the responsibility on him feels real. He really cares. It's nice to see Alex like this.
It's the most heartbreaking thing in the world, seeing how immediately attached he is to her. He's describing her to this family member and he's like, she's got brown eyes, but not like the boring brown. They're light and bright and hopeful. And she's got auburn hair.
Yeah.
And he's so invested instantaneously.
Well, he's also doing those descriptions because he wants it to be not so black and white. He wants it to be this guy's partner so badly. So if he just said she has brown hair and he says, no, it's not brown, he can be like, well, it's not totally brown. It's like almost like a red, it's kind of red as well. So if you said red, like this could still be her. Like the hope doesn't go away if he gives these like vaguer descriptions. Like her eyes, they're not just one color. Like it could be something else that's making them darker, or it could be something like the hope's not gone yet. I can describe this in a different way and see if it's the right person.
Well, and because honestly, she's probably quite unrecognizable in the current state she's in.
Completely.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem, I guess. This is totally the problem. Whereas the other pregnant woman he finds in the morgue is very distinctive, is very obvious. And sadly, that is this man's wife.
Speaking of trying to find lost people, O'Malley today is still searching for this 7-year-old boy. If you remember, his mother was found and she said she won't go into surgery until her little boy is found. So she's on the operating table, all strapped in and ready to go, and Bailey's going to be operating on her. And George comes in and tells her, "I found your boy. He's fine. We've got him in the waiting room."
Complete lie.
Complete lie. And Bailey says, "Well, what's going to happen when your lie gets found out when she wakes up?" And he says, "If my lie helps save a life, then I'm okay with this." But
I'm actually on George's side here.
All the white lies?
Yeah. To get this woman to go under, to get the life-saving surgery she needs, 1,000%. Mm-hmm. I'm actually against, but I understand Bailey's like, this lie is a problem. You need to stop doing it. Here's your punishment. You have to look for that boy every day. Mm-hmm. But is this the day for that, Bailey? They really need doctors to be helping people, not just running around the hospital looking for kids. Like, George's abilities are so much more needed elsewhere. I just don't think this is the day for a wild goose chase.
Well, it's also not the day for Bailey to be just standing around in an OR waiting to operate. Like, the quicker Bailey gets done with the surgery and gets out and is able to help more people, the better.
Yeah, so I think Betty, she does start operating.
Yeah, after George's told the lie.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Oh, sorry. Yeah
no, I agree
side.
With you.
You're on the same
yeah,
side.
I'm on the same right. side.
Yeah.
100%. And
they just don't have time for this today.
No. And
just get to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you can just get to it. But George is just running around asking everyone, bumping into every person we know. He's that floater that connects all of our stories today. And yeah. He bumps into he's in the stairwell looking at a map of the hospital as Alex is headed to the morgue. And George says, you know, there's so many places this little kid could hide. And Alex says, well, I know one place he could hide. Come with me. Rough, Alex. So rough.
Totally. I really see this as Alex needs a friend.
Yeah.
Alex acts so tough down here. George says things like, I don't know how this isn't getting to you, all this death. I don't know why you're fine with it. And Alex is like, it's just work. I don't care. It's just work. But he cares. His acting in this is so good. Yeah. You can see the pain in his face. Like, he is breaking today and he's just not letting anybody in.
No.
This could have been a moment where he actually lets his guard down and becomes vulnerable with George. They could have, but no, he won't let himself.
He doesn't. He's like, I care about people. And George says, you know, patients are people. These people here are people.
No, he says, I don't care about people. I only care about patients.
Oh, yeah. Patients are people.
The patients are people too. Mm-hmm.
Patients are people too. And Alex knows that better than anyone. It's the thing that George hasn't
doesn't
really
see.
Scoped in this moment. Yep.
Totally.
That, yeah, while he is desperately searching for this child, Alex is desperately searching for the family members of this woman. That's his whole motivation for doing this.
Totally. Yeah. I also think George has just lost his dad. So I think hearing what Alex is saying about these people, George is taking it really personally, like almost like, oh, once his dad passed away, like he wasn't a human to you anymore. Like, let's turn this body around. This is sad. And I don't think George understands that Alex does get it. Alex totally gets it because Alex never lets anybody in except to Addison.
Oh, my God.
I think Addison is the only person that really sees Alex.
And look, at the moment, Callie and Alex are the only ones who are really seeing what's going on with Addison. And I will say this episode is the first episode where Addison looks like she's falling apart a little bit. Not that I believe that anyone owes makeup and put togetherness on anyone, but that's always how we've seen Addison portrayed. And in this episode, she doesn't have the big hair. There isn't a lot of makeup. She's just quiet in the corner.
Oh, she has the eye makeup on. There's a very good close-up of her, like, incredible eye makeup.
But she doesn't have, like, the eyeliner and the lashes and stuff. It's always that stunning shadow, which for the life of me, I can't figure out how they're doing. I think it's got a lot to do with her eye shape. But props to the makeup artist who deals with Addison. You are doing the best job.
Yeah, it's very good. Mm-hmm.
You know who else is being an absolute badass and trying their darndest not to show any emotion this episode? And I think that's a big part of this episode too. Just blank stares, steel walls.
That little girl?
The fucking horror movie.
From the horror movie?
Well, I was going to say Christina, but like same, but different. That kid, I think I even wrote the notes of like, Derek escorted to the water. This child is a horror movie. An absolute horror movie.
Someone needs to cast her in a horror film.
They should have 15 years ago.
I mean, she's older now, but yeah, she'd be horrifying. Perfect.
She wouldn't have to say a thing the whole episode, just stand there with her dead, dull eyes. Oh.
Yep.
We see a smile at the end of the episode, and I just can't believe it. I'm like, you're going to go home and murder your parents, aren't you? Mm-hmm. You're going to put a voodoo curse on them.
She's so scary.
No, Christina's been putting on a really hard face, and I think it's not only that our interns today are putting up this stone wall, but they're all reaching out in non-specific ways. Like Christina is asking everyone in the hospital, have you seen Meredith? Have you seen Meredith? Where is Meredith? While she is sitting at the nurse's station, you know, answering questions left, right, and center. She is on top of everything. She has been keeping this hospital floor running.
I love seeing this side of Christina, because we know she's capable in surgery. We know she doesn't want to be doing all this paperwork, but she's good at it. She's running this floor like a professional. She's absolutely kicking goals down here, and it sucks that she can't appreciate that in herself, because she is... she's wrapped up in A, finding Meredith, and B, jealousy that she's not down there.
But if anyone was able to look just a little bit outside of themselves, they would be able to see that each of our interns today is having a rough time.
Also, absolutely smashing it.
Let's talk about Izzy.
Yeah. Yeah. So we pick up where we left off with Izzy. She's down in the car park with her patient who's been crushed under a car and all of his best friends.
That guy needs to just shut
and he
up.
Is. No one is coping down there. Their friend is basically dead, and Izzy just cannot find the strength to keep going. It's so hard. She knows that she can help other people, but also all of these guys like yelling at her to help their friend when she can't get him out and she's done everything she thinks
her
she
big
can
word
do.
Today is believe. If you want to have a drinking game, go grab a bottle of tequila, and every time Izzy says believe, you will be toasted. Because all of his friends are being like, you can't let him die. He's dying. You're doing this. And she's like, you've got to believe in him. You've got to believe in me. Also, just leave me the heck alone and let me work.
Also, unfortunately, the repercussions of Bailey's punishment to Izzy really show up here, because she says, I'm out of practice. I haven't been doing this. I've only been watching. I don't know what else to do. And it's at this moment you realize like, fuck.
Completely. Like Christina should have been here and not Izzy. It doesn't make any sense that Izzy was sent here to do this triaging. But
agreed.
I think Izzy's probably the only character this episode who actually accepts their shortcomings and asks for help. And she does that by calling Weber. And all my notes say is, this would have been a lot easier with a video phone.
1,000%. But
do you know what else made it easier?
It's the flip phone generation, gang. It is flip phone time. Wait, are they flip phones? Oh, my God, they're not.
They
oh, my God,
phones.
Did I put that? Oh, thank God. It's like, did I just want that so badly that all I see is her holding like a pink Motorola razor?
I cannot get over everyone losing their shit about flip phones, like the new smartphone flip phones.
The new ones. Like, yeah, yeah.
Still don't.
There's something so satisfying about the click. Oh,
it was being able to, like, if you had no hands or no pockets, you could just literally flip it over your waistband.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
It was a dream. But I think the real savior of this episode is the metric system. So Weber and Sloan are in what appears to be an operating room, like, yeah, waste that space team, trying to talk Izzy through drilling burr holes. And the first thing he says is, oh, the temporal tissue is only a couple of millimeters thick. And I was like, oh, yeah, good chat. This is why the metric system works, because 5/64ths of an inch is not something that makes any sense.
Shout out to the metric system.
But I will say, all of the like life hacks I've watched over this time, which is holding up the drill, all I could think was, oh, all you need is a little bit of tape around the drill bit that can show you what a couple of millimeters is, and then you just stop drilling when you hit the tape. Oh, you only want to drill so far into something, grab your drill bit and measure. Say you only want to go into your drywall and it's like 5 mil thick. Ah. You measure 5 mil at the end of the drill bit, put a bit of tape around it so you know how deep you're going, because when it gets to the tape, you're there.
That's very clever.
But then she also goes on to say the hole is about 2 centimeters wide. And I'm like, oh, Izzy, are you saying it's not almost an inch?
Yeah, I didn't even pick up on that, because clearly the metric system is all I know. So I didn't even think about it.
5/64ths of an inch is 2 millimeters, in case you were wondering.
That's a ridiculous number. What is that?
It's literally how the non-metric system works. It's ludicrous.
So also, I just want to give a shout out to burr holes. This is the first burr hole mention of the show. And I think about burr holes so much because of this show. We go on to learn a lot about burr holes. There's so many burr holes in Grey's Anatomy. And I think about them all the time. Like when my legs are really hot and they're like feeling a bit swollen, I'm like, oh, burr holes. Or like, you know, if you have
an pimple
and it's really red and big, sometimes I'm like, oh, it needs a burr hole. Like anything that is going to relieve that pressure, any hole that you can make. Well,
can you put a burr hole in my soul, please?
Exactly. Oh. They solve a lot of problems.
They do.
I mean, one specific problem, but like a lot of problems.
But it's the fact that it's just a drill. Like every time I go to the dentist, I am shook at the fact that, and I've said this to my dentist, I'm like, how is dentistry still so fucking archaic? Like, I understand it's come a long way, no shade. You've got some very fancy tools and, like, you've got a camera on the end of a stick.
But, like, a drill's still just going to do the job.
Right. I said, I'm like, I'd have a tooth pulled. He literally had pliers in my mouth. She's like, well, they're not called pliers. I'm like, they're pliers though, right? She's like, yeah, they're pliers.
Totally.
Thank you.
Totally.
You're still just fucking hoofing teeth out of jaws with the terrifying Middle Ages surgeon's kit.
Oh, yeah.
It's dentistry. Yeah. And then you watch like sci-fi shows and they're just getting lasers in their mouth and they're asleep. I'm like, yep, that feels like where we should be at. Yeah, a lot of brain surgery and skull and bones. Like Callie is still using the same shit from World War II.
I know. She just pulls bones apart, breaks people's legs. She really just gets in there. I really appreciate the fact. Sorry, I'm rewinding our chat a little bit. When you said Izzy accepts her shortcomings and what she doesn't know and she asks for help, because I didn't pick up on that in that way. And I think that's really interesting because you're right. Everyone needs help today. Everyone is struggling and no one asks for help. The only other instance I feel where someone actually asks for help in a roundabout way is Alex taking George into the morgue, even though he doesn't ask for it, but he's like tricking him into being there because I think Alex just didn't want to be alone.
Is this one of those episodes,
episodes
where we're looking at it through a millennial lens? Because a lot of the stuff that we talk about that's not quite right has to do with a lot of relationship stuff, But I'm looking at this and no one specifically asks for help except for Izzy. But everyone else is desperately crying for help.
Yeah, they're just not outwardly
saying it. Like,
totally.
Mm-hmm. And Sydney, like I said before, is someone who's very observant and is paying attention to the little things and seeing people struggling at a mental health level, and even offers Alex, like, do you need a moment to sit down, take a breath?
Yeah.
Do you need to have a chat? Do you need a hug? Whereas we're watching Christina all day desperately asking people, where's Meredith? And no one's really paying attention to that. And maybe it's just where we've come to as a people now that we can see these cries for help and desperation. But you're right. Alex is kind of the only one. Like, yeah, he doesn't want to be alone. So he brings Alex with him to the morgue. But he's also the only one that's picked up that Addison is struggling and terribly lonely. What she said was horrific. It's a huge red flag. If any of your friends said that, you'd be like, okay, I think it's time we go to the doctor. Have you spoken to anyone else about these feelings?
Yeah, you'd definitely take it really seriously and want to have a chat.
Mm-hmm.
What else? So, yeah, we have Christina.
But we weren't allowed in the early thousands to be outwardly
struggling
forward about our mental health. And honestly, I think that only really changed after COVID. And we spoke about this in the earlier seasons, how great it is nowadays to be able to say to your friends and not be judged and not be reprimanded for saying, hey, I can't do this today. I'm having a bad mental health day.
Totally.
You said it to me this week. I said it to you a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we understand and we're proud of our friends for doing that and feel good that they feel like they can be vulnerable in front of us.
And, yeah, being able to ask for what they need. Like it's mm-hmm. And then it's just nice knowing that you can ask for things like that and people are going to understand and give you a reprieve or help you.
And not blow you up and take it personally like Burke does when Christina is trying to explain that they don't even have the tools to explain how they're feeling.
Yeah.
So Christina and Burke finally get into a room together. And she says to Burke, she's like, I need Meredith. She is my person. And he gets really offended by that. And I can understand why. Because he's like, oh, so you need her approval. And she's just trying to explain to him how important she is and that she can't celebrate until she's celebrating with her friend.
Exactly, yeah.
And all he does is take it personally because she says, you know, she is the person I would call if I murdered someone to drag the corpse along the river, right?
I love that. It's a callback.
Is that what it was?
Across the river.
Across the floor, yeah.
Not across the floor, but the river is
and all he comes out is, oh, so you're saying that I'm a corpse? I'm done. This man is so fucking selfish.
She's really trying to be vulnerable and open up and try and explain something to you. Like, you just have to listen. Like, yes, maybe you don't understand the intimacy of female friendships and this particular friendship because he doesn't have any close friends. So just, like, try and understand, try and listen. This is the person that you love. Try and understand that there's people in mm-hmm. her life that she cares about that aren't just you.
Your partner shouldn't be your entire support network. No, but that's this is what I'm getting at. Looking at this from a modern perspective and seeing all these people struggle and being so insular and seeing mental health or struggles as weakness is maybe it's just us and the kind of people that we associate with. But I think society as a whole has come a long way.
It's really hard to watch Burke getting so personally offended by what Christine is saying. I really struggle in that scene. I feel so hard
listening
for Christina. She's not great at articulating her feelings, and we all know that. So the fact that she's trying to do it, you should be proud of her. Should give her the space at least to just try and open up to you. Like,
I don't understand why this is so important. Can you please explain it to me?
Yeah, and even if that doesn't work, you just accept it. You go, okay, well, this is how you feel.
Like, she's not saying that she's not happy to be with him or that he's a corpse. She's just like, there's nothing to do with
Burke. Has nothing to do with Burke at all.
It's so annoying. Yeah,
it's annoying. It's really hard. And also, she's fucking crushing it today. I really wish she could see that and give herself a little gold star. So Izzy comes back from saving this man's life with the drill because the burr holes worked, and she comes back in the ambulance, and Weber takes the patient from her, and Izzy is feeling like, you know, she didn't do as good as she wishes she could because of her lack of tools and equipment. And she's almost apologizing to Weber, being like, this happened and this happened. I ran out of this, but he's here. And finally she gets
positive reinforcement.
She feels like she's good at her job. That's exactly it. She hasn't had that for so long, and he's so proud of her. And you can see he's just absolutely beaming inside, like, at how amazing Izzy was, that she is a rock star. He doesn't say that, but he says, you saved this man's life. Go scrub in. You're going into the OR. You're off probation. And I'm so happy for Izzy. Well,
fun fact, the rock star line wasn't scripted. That's something that Katherine Heigl put in her, like, jubilant nature.
Oh, I love that. That feels, yeah, that's really nice. Mm-hmm.
And she tries to tell Christina about it, and all Christina can ask is, where's Meredith? And Izzy takes it as jealousy.
Yeah.
But I do like that Izzy doesn't let it get her down. She's learning not to rely on the validation of other people as much. She's getting it from herself, but also just doesn't pick up on the fact that Christine is crumbling.
Yeah. She doesn't have the space to kind of take that in because she's on such a high.
Oh, that's a really, I think what you said there is so important.
Yeah, your capacity can be full because you're happy as well, not because you're struggling.
Yeah. I heard something the other day, and it was, I'm trying not to assume malice. It was a woman specifically talking about her husband doing things that she found thoughtless.
Right.
And she's like, to try and stop getting into arguments, I'm trying to perceive that my partner does things without malice. They are not specifically trying to hurt me in this way.
Yeah.
And you said a couple of episodes ago that your New Year's thing is picking a word.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to try and go forth with not perceiving malice.
I love that.
Because
I think that's really important.
And it's also being able to say that, like, as you just said, I don't have the capacity for this at the moment. And I don't think it's being dismissive. It's being honest. It's showing that this is something that is important to you and you want to be able to fully understand it and take it on. And I think it goes hand in hand with assuming a lack of malice in things. And you and I both have ADHD. We both have rejection sensitivity. And remembering that there isn't malice in a lot of things, woof, has helped so much in the last week or so.
It's actually really interesting you say that because it is something that I learned at acting school. It's like really, it was really hammered in the sort of training that I did, that you can never judge your own character. So if you're about to play someone and they're not a good person, they're the villain, they hurt other characters, you can't step into those shoes and see them only as bad and see all the actions as bad. You need to understand that most people think that they're doing the right thing for whatever reason it may be. Maybe it's a selfish reason, but in their head, this is the correct thing. Most people don't walk through life wanting to do the wrong thing.
Intentionally people, being malicious.
Exactly it. So that not only as an acting thing that I do, but I really do try and use that for a lot of people, just mm-hmm. understanding of people. It's like I may perceive something as wrong or as mean or as malicious, but why are they actually doing that? They don't think they're, most people don't walk through life being like, I am so mean. I'm going to really put that person down because I just want to be mean. They're doing it out of their own insecurity. They're doing it out of, they think that it's going to make themselves feel better, or they think that maybe that person actually doesn't care what I say to them, or maybe
Alex taking George to the morgue. George sees it as malicious.
Yeah.
Like, why would you take me here? This is so rude.
Yeah.
Alex is like, no, you need to find someone. It is a bit of a shitty, harsh reality, but like, you hadn't come to this conclusion, so I'm trying to help you get there.
Exactly. And Alex is also doing it because Alex doesn't know how to ask for help. Alex feel like he needed someone to come with him. I reckon he was walking up that staircase, heading towards the morgue, being like, oh, I don't know if I can handle this.
Isn't the morgue in the basement?
Oh, I don't know. But he was on his way. He collected George on his way.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely something that Burke hasn't clued onto. He always thinks that Christina has malicious intent.
Yeah.
And it's just another huge red flag.
Yeah.
I wonder why we've all been put to the default of that. Oh, I suppose it's, you know, no one else is going to be there for you. You need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get it done yourself.
I mean, I don't think everyone thinks that, but I do think there is a level of wariness and distrust that a lot of people have. But I don't know. I don't think we always have had that. I don't know.
I think it's something that a lot of us have definitely been brought up with, this forgetting that humans as a people are a tribe and that relying on other people isn't a weakness. It's how humans are supposed to operate as a community.
Definitely. And I actually think that's a different thing. I think feeling like you have to do everything by yourself is not the same as assuming someone is acting with malicious intent.
Yeah. I don't think I worded that very well. But I think assuming the best doesn't hurt anyone.
Not at all. Not at all.
But at the end of everyone's very, very rough day, all of our interns are back in the hospital and pagers start going off everywhere. Because earlier today, Derek finds our hollow-eyed child standing amongst a bunch of people rushing around.
So she's just staring, and Derek knows that Meredith was the last person with that child. Well, the last place Derek saw Meredith was with that child, and all of a sudden he's assuming bad mm-hmm. things. Like, why else would you be like, where is she? Where is she? Where is she? I think he can feel something's off. He like can sense something's wrong, you know?
Well, at the start of the last episode, he accused Meredith of trying to kill herself.
So I guess he is aware that she's having a time. Yeah.
A time. But he ends up following this little girl, and she takes him to the edge of the dock.
Points out to sea.
And
like a pirate finding land.
Just points out to sea.
Out there.
Like a pirate. Yeah, because old mate with the giant leg wound is trolleyed past him and has Meredith's tag. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So she doesn't have a jacket on. But, yeah, the little girl has the heart of Davy Jones.
Yes.
That little kid terrified me, honestly.
We don't get to see Derek doing a big, like, dive into the water, which I wonder if they ever actually filmed that.
And again, back to the timeline, because we all see Meredith bobbing up and down and then she sinks. But Derek goes in to save her. And I'm like,
yeah.
Even in the amount of time that we saw him on screen, like 2-3 minutes, she's out there. She's gone.
Yeah, I'm okay with the creative license in that timeline of the drowning.
Yeah, okay.
I think the impact of her falling off at the very start and then her doing the monologue as she goes under, I think, like, visually, storytelling-wise, if you'd done it in any other way, it wouldn't have been as dramatic. Like, if she'd just fallen off then and Derek went and jumped in, it just wouldn't have felt as...
Oh, for anyone who's watching this for the first time, are you okay?
Oh, yeah.
Are you all right?
It's a big one.
It was...
She's very blue. Like, it's very... The makeup is incredible. This episode, the makeup... Oh, God. Speaking of flip phones...
1998, you're a great time.
The makeup in this episode is incredible. All the special effects, all of the makeup, Meredith's blue, Addison's face, it's amazing.
And honestly, the CG for at its time, like, that ferry boat looks polished. Yeah.
I think I said this last episode, but compare it to, like, Charmed. I love Charmed, by the way. But compare the CGI in this to the CGI in Charmed. And it feels like completely different decades.
Well, also the prosthetics in Charmed are just like, oh, I can see that's made out of clay.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're still really good, by the way. It's hard to turn humans into monsters, but, like,
but this specific episode, I think the people who worked on it were really exceptional.
Really, really good. Yeah.
But she gets wheeled into hospital and Derek's doing the heart palpitations. Bailey's in there trying to place an IV. And then Dr. Burke comes in and says, oh, she's hypothermic. Thanks, Captain Obvious. The bitch is blue.
It's like, yeah, mate, she's blue. Yeah. Yeah.
But Weber sends Derek out.
It shows that all these attendings are kind of, they're trying to beat. Meredith is a beloved person in this hospital. Derek is a beloved person in this hospital. Everyone is freaking out. Derek gets sent away. He sits in the corridor. This is the most upset and frazzled and distressed we've ever seen Derek. I think Patrick Dempsey actually plays this really well.
And Sloane actually comes and sits beside him as a show of support. But it really wasn't until Addison goes into that room that my eyes went and you got the heavy chest feelings.
I hard agree. I think it's a combination of Kate Walsh just being so expressive because she doesn't really need to say anything. She says throws out a couple of procedures, but it's all in her face. The sheer terror and horror, and I think we realize how dire this is as soon as Addison looks at Derek through that door.
She's not only caring for a person that she loves, and it doesn't have to be a romantic love. It's a person that she cares about. And I think the amount of demonizing we had of Addison, and now we're seeing that she genuinely cares about all of the people at this hospital without bias.
She's able to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
There is not many characters that we have at the moment that are as forgiving as Addison.
No.
That whole like, I know it's
are able to see their own implications in these actions.
Yeah, and this particular thing that I'm about to say, I think definitely would have, like, religious connotations, but I don't mean it in a religious way as well. I do think it's a lesson that is one of the good lessons that's come from religion, is this idea of, like, once you forgive, you become more free.
Mm-hmm.
You can release those feelings, and forgiveness is really just for yourself in the end. And I think this scene of Addison, it shows that so well, because she's so able to move on from something that hurt her so deeply, which was this year, apparently, that we've just found out.
In props, justice for Addison.
Justice for Addison. Her husband, she came over here. Derek was sleeping with someone else. She got completely and utterly villainized She got called Satan. She's had the worst fucking year in the world. Derek has been gaslighting her. She's had to work with her husband's new girlfriend, which is so hard for everybody.
She's been shamed in front of all of her colleagues on several occasions. All of
these little interns have like had moments where, you know, the intention was to pick her apart, to laugh at her, to see her as bad, to see her as evil. Yet she has forgiven, and even though she still, yeah, has a lot of love for Derek, in this moment she's so scared, she's so worried, she has so much depth of feeling that she's so worried for Meredith, she's so worried for Derek, and her own things that she's gone through this year is not impacting her at all.
No, but then we have all of our interns. So there's sort of a door between where Meredith is and where our interns are.
Well, and where Mark and Derek are. And I think that is really important. Meredith is being being looked after by
Weber, Bailey, Burke, and Addison are all
in one room. Then we have Sloan and Derek in the hallway. Then there's another door, and then the rest of our interns. I don't know. I think the separation of these three groups is important for the way that this episode has been structured and the themes around this episode of like everyone feeling separate, everyone feeling isolated, this disconnect. I think all these doorways are actually important thematically. Or I'm just reading into everything too much, but you know.
I agree. No, I don't disagree with you. And I think that those thoughts come into play when creating scenes like that. And we were also taught to dissect everything in high school in film and book.
True.
It's like my favorite thing was in year 12 or year 11. And one of our teachers was like, all right, so we're going to do Donnie Darko. So me being one of the emo kids in the back of the room already loved and had seen Donnie Darko. Got to the end of the film and teacher was like, so what do we think is the theme behind this? What is the feel? What is the emotion? And all the jocks had no idea and he was trying to delve us deep into it and I put my hand up and I was like, oh, the writer and creator of Donnie Darko has actually said that it means nothing and that's the whole point of it. The teacher took me outside and was like, so you've just ruined an entire semester's curriculum. What are we going to do about this now? There is no way that I'm going to make any of those boys in there able to think any deeper into this. And I was like, do your homework. Oh, my God, that teacher's name was Derek. The point is that I don't disagree with you. I was begging for them to go in and be there. And you can see Christina when she comes up is
– yeah.
Being held back. And I think that the separation is important because it's having our interns
yes.
find solace and comfort in each other. And then Izzy opens her fucking mouth.
Yes. Yes. Exactly what you just said is what I was going to say. The intention here is that they connect with each other, that they need each other, that they all really need each other to get through everything that they have been through and are going to go through at their new job.
Mm-hmm. And Izzy starts off really good and she says to everyone, she will come through this. I believe she will survive this, just as Alex and George are very much, she's going to die. And
yeah.
George, oh, my God, that boy needs a hug. He needs to be taken away. He needs to be put in a soft room because
like that, my God.
He's still come, what, his dad died 2 weeks ago? Why is he back at work? And she's going through all the stuff that she believes and, you know, Denny died and I believe he's here with me and blah, 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 and then just turns directly to George, who's come off the back of his father dying, is obviously really struggling with this and says, I believe you made a terrible mistake marrying Callie, and as my best friend, I believe we will get through this.
Everything she was saying was
why
so
are you loading that on
great.
Now? Why do you think
and
it's your
then
place?
That a personal attack on Callie to George, it just is so out of place. It's so out of place. I just hate the Kelly bashing so much for no reason. But okay. Okay. Yes, that's totally how I feel. But
why?
Also, in looking at it with your new sense of your walking through the world this year, I believe, I also, it's wrong. I would be offended if I heard that. That would be upsetting. But I do believe that Izzy is coming at this from a, I'm your best friend. I mean, she does say that. I'm your best friend and I've been holding this back and I need to tell you this. Actually, she hasn't been holding it back at all. She's made this very clear for a long time. I wish it was more to do with timing.
Whatsoever.
Like, you guys got married too quickly and that's what she thinks. I believe she thinks she's coming from a protective friend place, but also I just don't agree. I just don't think you
can. But if she said, I believe that you rushed into marrying Callie out of your grief.
Totally.
But it's just not the right place.
It's not the place.
Not the right place.
Time? It's not the place. It's not the time. And it's like, I don't even think you should say that.
Mm-mm.
At all until George comes to you and like is like, hey, can I ask you some questions? I'm having some feelings. Can I talk to you specifically about that? I just don't think you can say that to anyone.
I wonder if George is going to keep to his word when he defended Callie in the locker room.
Or when he defended Callie and told everybody the middle name that she said, I don't want to tell anybody my middle name.
Yeah, that, double-edged sword. Yeah, okay.
Double-edged George.
Double-edged George.
That wasn't good, but we'll roll with it.
There are two sides to George and we don't particularly care for either of them.
Mm.
But we go back into Meredith's room and they've been doing the things to revive her for 20 minutes now, and our episode closes with the monitor flatlining and Meredith gasping awake in this ethereal hospital bed. And the first thing she sees when she wakes up is Roy. I want to say Roy. I was trying to avoid saying pink mist. Because of the mush face comment.
Well, mush face is worse than pink mist.
So much worse. So we see him and damn, he's so handsome. And then we see the more handsome, Denny. How can that man look so good in just a white t-shirt? And she asks them both.
I know. She's like, am I dead?
Am I dead? Yes.
Look, it's weird. Yeah, but I don't love a dream sequence. I'm not a dream sequence gal. I hate a dream sequence. I hate a this isn't really happening moment. I'm not about it.
But maybe it is. Who knows? We will find out next week.
You sure will.
Mm-hmm. And we get to see more Denny. Wow.
I just think Shonda just loves Denny. I've forgotten his name. I'm so sorry. As an actor, she just loves him so much. She'll do anything to just pop him in a scene.
And I am not mad at that. I love him too. The amount of TV shows that he just plays the dead husband, like he was the dead husband in Weeds.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That's so funny.
They make such a good looking couple. But yeah.
Was that a seagull? Do you have a seagull outside your house?
There's a big construction site across my house. And for some reason, the seagulls and the pigeons are having a turf war.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I do not live near the ocean, for anyone wondering.
That's why I was so confused. It's like, why is there a seagull there?
There's also a KFC at the end of my street. And on all of the telegraph poles along my street, it says, take your rubbish with you. And I didn't understand it when I first moved to this house. And now my garbage bin ends up half full of KFC boxes because people will drive out of the KFC and they can only turn left. And they will just park out the front of my house, hoofing KFC in their car. And then they'll either dump it on the sidewalk in the gutter or get out and put it in my rubbish bin. There's KFC littered all over my street, which is why all the seagulls and all the pigeons live on my street.
That's so bad. I wonder what the that's so bad. I wonder what the there has to be a solution to that. I mean, the government putting up signs like that is not it.
Oh no, the neighbors have put up these signs.
Oh fuck.
They're homemade.
Right.
Yeah, I think people have been dealing with it for years.
Yeah. That would be awful.
No, what's more awful is when you're really hungry and there's no food in the house, just smelling KFC. I don't like KFC. I really don't like it. But it smells real good.
I love the chips. I love KFC chips. They're my favorite of the chips. Nah,
Red Rooster in the chips world. Hands down. They're always hot. They're well seasoned. Delicious. So from a vegan and a glutard, we can eat the chips.
Okay, so I actually have a KFC story. Just sorry, while we're at it, we're going on a little rant. So I've been sleeping really badly, and something that puts me to sleep very easily that I love is ASMR. Is ASMR. And I found a new one. This girl does these little ones that are specifically to like put you to sleep. And I've been getting really into her videos this week. But for some,
does she have glasses and tippy tappy nails?
They all have tippy tappy nails.
Oh, okay.
But for some reason, there has been an ad popping up at the end of her videos. And I keep thinking it won't happen this time, won't happen this time. And it's always a KFC ad. So I will be happily asleep. And then I have been jolting awake so hard to this. I don't care. I love it. I love it. I don't care. And I'm like, every night.
I think it is the perfect slogan, although that I get that out a lot. And I think it's the perfect slogan for KFC because everyone knows it's not very good and you feel awful after you eat it. But I don't care. I love it.
Crazy. It's just so in my head. I have to find a new ASMR person because it's not fair to make an ASMR video to put people to sleep and then put that ad at the end of it to wake them back up.
Well, also, if you're making it the whole way through their video and you're not asleep, no.
Exactly.
My big one at the moment is I found a man who's reading the original Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, cute.
And he just has this very soothing voice. And because have you read Alice in Wonderland? Okay, yeah. So because it is so such trippy, a fever dream of a book, it's such a fever, because he's so soothing and it's so hard to follow when you're not actively reading it, it just you're done.
The second one or the third one is the most, like, I think I didn't finish them because one of them is just so, like, so much harder to follow. You're like, what? I don't even know.
Okay.
I don't.
Is it my mind only, but was there a live-action Alice in Wonderland that was made in the 80s, in the 90s, that was much more true to the books than anyone else, and the girl playing Alice was this child actor that was a little bit under the radar, but she had brown hair?
I don't know.
I just remember this scene where she's very little and she's, like, running along a bookcase.
I don't know. There was definitely a movie before, like, not the animated. There is an older movie. Not the Tim Burton one. Not the animated Disney. There's another one. Definitely. But I don't remember it that well.
Point is, this is a very long outro. I hope you all sleep well and dream of fried chicken. Have a delightful day.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for a train. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for sending us messages and comments. You know we love it. We will talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye. Where did the end of that episode?
I don't know. Down the rabbit hole.
It was good.
Vagina.
Sing it.
Vagina.